You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 7:07 and a half. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. It's the last Tuesday, or not yet? Is it the last Tuesday?
Last Tuesday.
Yeah, it is the last Tuesday of the month, and that's why Bruce Ash is here. Welcome
that's
back,
correct.
Sir.
Thank you.
Of course, Inside Track on the weekends. You just had a great show with Vince Leach and Frank Antonori this last Saturday. And we have two events I want to wake-up events. July 17th will be at the Short Rest Tavern inside Games and Gadgets at Tucson Mall. We're going to do a happy hour trivia night. Please join us, 5:30. Should be very, very fun. And then the biggin', the granddaddy of them all, is on August 17th, Saturday night at the Westward Look Resort. We're going to do a night at the USO. It is a fundraiser for Honor Flight because they missed their funding for May, so they didn't go in May. And we want to make sure these veterans get back to D.C. with their guardians in this November. So we're going to try our damnedest to raise some money at this amazing event. It's $40, I think, is the price right now. You'll be fed properly. We always take care of you at a wake-up event. Cash bars. We don't pay for your drinks. We know what you people do. And
you say they're a bunch of boozers?
Yes. Some of them. And so we're going to have a great time with that, and we're going to have an amazing silent auction and other raffle prizes. One of the big raffle prizes, Tucson Coin and Autograph, has Seth and the crew over there has donated a chunk of gold that's worth somewhere between $1,300 and $1,400 that we're going to be raffling off for veterans. So those tickets will be going out very, very soon. But this is an RSVP mandatory event, wakeuptucson@gmail.com. No RSVP, Matt and I throw you right down into a wash that's right outside Westward. Matt's been doing some Pilates lately to get his
burpees.
And his burpees. Good morning, the Don Dickinson. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I knew Don in a previous life.
Oh, boy.
So it's funny. So Margo's like, oh, you know, Don, he's a teacher and, you know, history and economics. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Right? And I go, what if it's the Don Dickinson? So Don used to run, you know, there was a time in Tucson where we had many awesome special events that brought lots of people from all over the country and globally to participate in
and
such
millions
things.
Of dollars to the economy.
And so Don organized and ran. It was originally called the Copper Bowl.
It was called the Copper Bowl.
Yep.
I met with the Copper Bowl Foundation and said, hey, how about tacking on a tennis tournament? And they were all for it, and off we went.
And you grew this thing. How many? What was your peak amount of players?
We had 1,000 players. It ended up being the largest junior tennis tournament in the world.
Wow.
We used 16 sites. We were at the El Conquistador, but we used almost every tennis site in Tucson. It was a huge event.
As a hotel guy in those days, that was part of what you plugged into your, as you're looking at group business and things like that. You know, because the bowl went away.
Yeah.
But you guys stayed as the Copper Bowl tournament.
We did. So in terms of the Sheridan Corporation, we were the most successful Sheridan during that time period of any Sheridan in the United States.
Yep. And so, and also, this is between Christmas and New Year's.
Yep.
And that's a dead time of the year for resorts.
The resort loved me.
Yep. It was great for Oral Valley businesses and restaurants and all that. So congratulations on that. So
then you decided...
After that, because I notice you're in your 16th year of teaching. This feels like you quit the tennis business 17 years ago.
Well, I actually retired from teaching in 2018, so I did 16 years.
Oh, gotcha.
And I decided to do what I always wanted to do, intended to do, which was become a teacher. And I went back to school in my 50s and got a master's degree, and I poured myself into teaching just like I did into sports. And for me now, it was the most fulfilling career I had. And I specialized in advanced placement, world history, economics, human geography, and I had a great time with kids and a great time
teach?
Learning. So I taught at Ironwood Ridge High School, and
okay.
then I taught at University High, finished up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why... world history, military history?
Well, my father, birth father, was killed in World War II on May 4th, 1945 in Austria.
Wow.
And one day before the German soldiers put down their arms.
Wow.
My mother remarried to a decorated World War II pilot, and he was called back into the Korean War, 1950.
Wow.
And then he was killed in a night training mission in Oklahoma City, where the base was, where they were training the pilots to go to Korea. And then she remarried again. And so at age 12, I had a stepfather that raised me. That was just a wonderful stepfather. And he had been a POW in the Battle of the Bulge. And so from that sparked my interest in working with veterans. And then when I became a teacher, I became part of the Veterans Heritage Project, which interviewed veterans. And so my 16 years, I had students and myself interviewed 164 veterans.
That's amazing.
I've done 20 Korean War vets. And here in Tucson, five of them were, three of the five were from Tucson High, part of a group called Easy Company, and they went to the start of the Korean War, landed, did the Enchon landing, and recaptured Seoul, and went to the north, and then were in this horrific Chosun battle. They're called the Chosun Few.
Right.
And so
that's an amazing group of men.
Oh, my goodness. And we still have one at our association, which, by the way, anybody can join the Korean War Association. We meet every Wednesday at the Tucson Police Department on Stone. And so we have one Chosun Few that's still alive and with us today. Yeah,
I have talked to this group. I have hung with this group. It's just good for your soul.
Oh, it is.
Just hang out with these gentlemen and their wives. They're amazing.
They really are. Yeah, yeah. I just love them to death. And Margo Susco is the
sick of Margo.
Yeah, commander, and she has a loving heart.
She's
and,
listening, so that's why I said it.
Okay, she has a loving heart, and there's a lot of support for these guys. I mean, they're in their 90s now. They're passing away quickly, and so all that we can do to comfort them and make their life better is a real plus.
Yeah, again, these guys, we had a couple of them on for Veterans Day. It was Gage and the crew, and just amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. Let's go to break, and we're hanging out and finding out more with Don Dickinson, Bruce Ash, and I. Questions or comments, 790-2040. If Don owes you money, 790-2040 will push you right up at the front of the line. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, 719 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. Let's see. Our friend Betsy said her cousins from Fremont, Nebraska played in that tennis tournament in the 80s and 90s and loved it. She was also in the hotel business in those days, so she knew about the power of the Copper Bowl tennis tournament. And then also remember that it's Honor Flight Southern Arizona when we're donating for this fundraiser we're doing. There's two Honor Flights in Arizona we want to support. The one that needs our help is Honor Flight Southern Arizona. So if some of you want to, you know, can't make the party, you want to donate directly, Honor Flight Southern Arizona. So we're talking to Don Dickinson. Margo sent me your bio. You have, of course, the U of A Circle K Teacher of the Year, American History Teacher of the Year by the Daughters of the American Revolution. I love it. That's great. I love it. You were just kind of, you were dropping some good knowledge on Bruce and I about declassified information in the Soviet Union, about the planning of the Korean War. So let's walk the listeners through this a little bit.
Yes. So this information is coming from a paper written by Dr. Weathersby at Johns Hopkins University. And these declassified documents came with the fall of the Soviet Union in 1999. This paper was not published until 2015. So most Americans and most people around the globe don't really understand the whole planning that went into the Korean War from North Korea, and most particularly from Joseph Stalin. So here's kind of what happened. In March of 1949, Kim Il-sung had the whole military plan to take over the peninsula. And he went to Joseph Stalin, who he was totally dependent on and feared as well, to get approval to go ahead with this. Stalin reviewed it, liked the military plan, but he was really worried about the United States. They still had troops on the peninsula. We left in June of 1949 due to a UN mandate.
Okay.
And so he balked and said, keep the plan and we'll discuss it later. In 1949, Stalin helped Mao finish off his revolution that sent Chiang Kai-shek to Taiwan. 1949, another really important thing happened. The United States, in a press conference, Dean Acheson said to all the press.
What was Dean's position at the time?
He was the Secretary of State.
Okay, just so people know.
And he said to the press corps, U.S. press corps, we have a new Asiatic plan. And they drew a line. Everything east of that line, we're going to be actively involved. And, of course, it was Japan and Taiwan and the Philippines. Everything west of the line, we're not really going to be that involved in. Well, west of the line was the Korean Peninsula. So Stalin hears this, of course. And in 1949, another thing happened. Stalin and Russia got the atomic bomb. And he wasn't afraid of the United States, but he wanted to be sure he could win if we got into another war with them. So once he had the atomic bomb, he got a lot more confidence. The other thing, he observed what happened with Mao and Chiang Kai-shek. The U.S. was supporting Chiang Kai-shek, but they did not send any troops. They were limited in the way that they supported it. So he all of a sudden he got confidence. So in January of 1950... He made China official ally of the Soviet Union, and then he told Kim Il-sung that we're ready to go on this. We just need to tweak the military plan.
So our thing about, you know, not really supporting Chiang Kai-shek that strongly, we were still in post-World War II. We just did this.
Yeah,
does that feel right?
That's right.
It's understandable.
That's absolutely right. And so one of the things I got from this paper was to realize how important the perception is that your country creates on the global geopolitical scene, and also how important military intelligence is. So we had the standard view, even into the 60s and 70s, of how the Korean War started. Well, we had Russian troops in the north, and we had American troops in the south, and we had border clashes, and it was just kind of inevitable that we'd have some clashes, and nobody really wanted to have a full war. Not true at all. So the military plan was, and the start of the war was, Kim Il-sung was going to put all of his troops about 10 miles north of the 38th parallel. By the way, the 38th parallel was drawn up at the Potsdam Conference by the U.S. military. It was just an arbitrary line. It had no real rhyme or reason why it was, other than it's kind of made half-half. So, and then he was going to issue a proclamation that the Korean Peninsula should be unified under him. And then when it was rejected, that was going to be the start of the war.
It's always about reunification for these guys.
Yeah. And so the original military plan was, that came under Stalin's approval, was to have North Korean troops go to Unjin Peninsula on the west and go to Gangneung on the east. And then after that, capture Seoul and then get control of the Han River. And then right before the war began on June 25th, this day,
correct,
1950, he changed his mind. And they just decided to take the whole peninsula. And he had the condition that we don't want a prolonged war. We don't want a civil war. It has to be really fast and quick. And by the way, it almost happened. So Truman and his cabinet acted really quickly. They decided to have a police action. So at 10:30 at night on June 27th, they decided to send troops. And they decided that it would be a police action so they didn't have to go to Congress to get approval for a war. And then they took it right to the United Nations and got 16 countries with them in this proclamation. And that's how it all started.
It was just the idea that China wanted to expand its influence, and it chose the Korean Peninsula why over other parts, because Asia's a big place.
So I've done a big study in a paper on was the Korean War predictable? And when you go back in the history of China and Korea, you see that Korea was always a substate to China. They had Korea had to send their leaders to China and bow down, kowtow in front of the emperor. They had to send them concubines, send them certain amount of food in payment every year. And so there's been a constant conflict.
Back to Bruce's reunification.
Well, and also, pardon me, Korea was really looked down upon by the Japanese. But, you know, for centuries, they were considered to be, you know, less civilized, and they're, you know, lower kind of DNA than the Japanese.
You're absolutely
right. And certainly
right.
The Hans in China, I mean, they look down on everybody.
You've got that absolutely right, yeah. And realize that in 1905, the Russo-Japanese War, Teddy Roosevelt brokered it and won a Nobel Peace Prize, but basically he made Korea protectorate under Japan. So you had Japanese occupation. In 1931, the Japanese took over the peninsula completely with their military.
As well as Taiwan at the same time, I think, as well.
Yeah. So I'm married to a South Korean, and her mother went through Japanese occupation. And it was... A harrowing escape in 1948 to get across the border to the south, which she did, and then she went through the Korean War. So
wow, that is wild.
I have her biography that I've just written that I took from notes in 05, and I'm really glad I saved them and I wrote it.
Wow,
the lives of Koreans in the Second World War it's hardly ever written or depicted in movies and in popular culture. It was unbelievably horrible.
It is. They were literally peasants. The Japanese intended to completely obliterate the culture.
Right.
She had to take a Japanese name. She had to speak in Japanese.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to continue on with Bruce Ash and Don Dickinson, and we're going to talk about U.S. troops first getting on the soil in Korea, and Don's going to give you an interesting local angle on this too, with the soldiers that he interviewed. So we're talking to Don Dickinson, and we're playing the playlist from the entire area of Green Valley today as part of our custom bumps.
This is Ken White's selection. Haven't heard this in probably 45 or 50 years.
A little David Cassidy. Who knew? All right, 7:34 in the morning. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. Christopher DeSimone, Bruce Ash, and Don Dickinson, and we are talking about today is the start of the anniversary of the start of the Korean War, and Mr. Dickinson's been giving us some really amazing background on the planning of this from the North Korean, Russia/China side, and then, of course, it seems like, you know, we said stupid things like, here's a line. And we're going to ignore everything to the west of the line. And then just showing some, reluctance. Would that be a better word for the U.S. posture leading up to these events?
Yes. They just didn't want to get involved with the war, the fear of starting World War III.
Yeah.
How much did naivete, American naivete, contribute to this as well? Because these are malevolent people who planned all of this stuff.
Let's start with American public. Nobody had ever heard of Korea.
Right,
they didn't
right,
know where Korea
right,
was.
Right.
And you'll, when I speak about a couple of soldiers, when they were going to Korea, they had no idea where they were going. And even Larry Powers with Task Force Smith, the first American troops on the Korean Peninsula, they landed in Osan. The night before, he was told to pack as much ammunition as he could, and they got on boat, and he didn't know where they were going. And the American public was even in more in the dark, I think, yeah, with Korea.
The so talking about when we got there, one of the things we were talking about off air, you're talking about local guys that you interviewed.
Oh boy.
All right, who were they entered into the Marine Reserves.
Yes.
So explain this story, because I thought this was amazingly fascinating.
So we have a group in Tucson. They were called the Easy Company. They were the 13th Battalion of the 1st Marines. And these were all, I'm going to call them kids. They were kids, most of them at Tucson High. 80% of them Mexican-American. And somebody joined the reserves and then told a couple of his other buddies, hey, this is like a good deal. This is 1948-49.
Get a few bucks out of it too.
Yeah. There's never going to be another war. We get on a train. We go to California. Hey, we see some of those beautiful California girls. And guess what? You get a new pair of boots, a t-shirt that says Marines on it, and pants, and do that once a month. And there's like, you go out there for a month for a summer. And it's a really good deal, and you get paid. So they were joining like crazy. So there were over 280 kids from Tucson.
Wow.
That joined the Marine Reserves. And I was fortunate enough to interview some of them. So I remember Eddie Rios talking about coming back from one of his monthly trips out to the Marine base, and his mother greeted him and said, you got a note here, you need to report. And so they were just shocked. They were absolutely shocked. So they had to go to Camp Pendleton. And Niggy Romero is another one. By the way, so before I tell you this story, Niggy was wounded 4 times. He got shot in action, and when they were loading him on a truck, he got shot getting on the truck, and then the truck got intercepted. He got shot again, and he wow. And there's one more time, and his body was put in a pile of where they're going to bury everybody, and he was getting last rites. One of his buddies from Tucson came and saw him, and he realized, hey, he's not dead, so. Niggy survived that whole thing. He had over 60 operations after the war. That's part of his story. So, so Niggy was saying that when they went out there, they were called into active duty, and they told everybody to line up, and they all lined up in a single line. And
this is in California?
Yeah, in California. And they... A master sergeant said, all right, everybody that's been to 2 summer camps, take a step forward. And he'd been to 2, so he steps forward. And he's thinking to himself, oh, they're going to give us some special training. Those guys were sent right away. No training, nothing. They just, they were the first ones to arrive. And Kobe, Japan was the staging point. And they, when they got there, they ran into a typhoon. So these stories are just incredible. Eddie Rios went just a little bit later, and Eddie said they had so little practice shooting a rifle. They were practicing on the ship shooting fish on their way over. And so his quote was, we just played at being soldiers. We weren't soldiers. And they're the ones that landed at Incheon in this really tactically brilliant move by MacArthur. He has some on the other side as well. And then they captured Seoul, and then they marched north. And by the way, we had made it put to Pyongyang in October of 1950, and MacArthur made the decision to go north. And he said, the Chinese will never... engage in the war. And by the way, even if they do, they can't fight. They just know how to run laundries. I mean, he really actually said that. And so now if you know, Korea is 80% mountainous terrain, and they're known for the average temperature in the north is 20 degrees below zero in the winter. And that winter was the coldest on ever on the peninsula. It was 60 degrees below zero wind chill factor. And he marches his troops all the way up to the Chinese border. And then they get captured. Mao had pledged, or Stalin told him, you're pledging 300,000 troops. They surrounded the 1st Marines with 130,000 Chinese and about 30,000 of the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps has never retreated in a battle. But they had to fight their way out. They just said, well, we're just fighting in a different direction. So that's that whole story. And so these guys from Tucson, a number of them, went. So Eddie was telling me about what it was like. You were freezing. You had rubber boots, but your feet sweat. And so you would have frozen toes. And they were amputating fingers and
yeah, there's a lot of that going
toes
on.
And all of that. Mm-hmm. John Levy, he's not from Tucson, but he retired in Green Valley. He was a medic with that group, and he said one of the reasons that so many of them survived was it was so cold. The they didn't bleed to death. It stopped the bleeding.
My Lord. So of the 30 that were originally surrounded, how many made it out?
I don't exactly remember the number, but I think it's about half.
Okay.
I think it's about half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is higher than they would probably be expected in that situation.
Yes, because the Chinese had blown up bridges that really were strategic bridges to get into the South. And we airlifted. We'd never done this before. We airlifted portable bridges to go across the mountain gap. And it was successful. Really amazing story.
Wow.
So the first Tucsonan who was on the Korean Peninsula was a guy named Lawrence Powers. After the war, he founded Grant Lumber, if you ever remember that.
Sure, so, absolutely.
So he was with Task Force Smith, and he didn't know where he was going. And what his only instructions were, and they had him load up with as much ammunition as they could. Look, you stick with your unit, but if you get overrun, everybody's on their own. And in North Korea had 135,000 troops with a full tank brigade. From 1946 forward, North Korea was sending their troops to the Soviet Union for training. These were really good troops. South Korea had 95,000 soldiers with only rifles, intentionally did not have really good equipment because the United States was worried about Syngman Rhee trying to start a war to take over the whole peninsula. So we kept them, you know, kind of handicapped, so to speak, as it was the military. So they were just completely outnumbered. And Larry Powers has this great story of surviving, number one, and then number two, remembering where the remains were that he buried of his good friend. And about 5 or 6 years after the war, he was reading a publication where that soldier's parents were looking for him and any information, and he remembered. And they found the remains and brought it back. By
That's
the
amazing.
Way, there's more. There were more prisoners of war and unidentified soldiers in Korea than Vietnam in any war. There's like 7,000 or 8,000 that's never been heard of.
It was just the idea that unfamiliar with the territory. We didn't have that good of information about in those days.
We didn't have good information.
Right.
We didn't have the type of equipment we needed to have, and from my perspective now, looking back, going from Pyongyang in October to the Chinese northern border was just a suicidal mission. And so MacArthur really, really...
So MacArthur's ego got the best of us?
It did.
Best of him because he got fired shortly after.
And, you know, interesting, Truman firing him, the chiefs of staff all agreed with Truman. They didn't make it really that
public. He was not a popular guy amongst his peers. You know, the imperial general, you know, he was actually kind of an honorary rank, but given to him by the president of the Philippines.
Yes.
And he was the generalissimo of the Philippines army.
You've got it.
All right, we're going to do one more segment with Don Dickinson. I think we're going to have to have him come back. There's a lot to talk about. So questions or comments, 790-2040. Remember, August 17th is our Southern Arizona Honor Flight fundraiser, a night at the USO. Let me know you're coming mandatory at wakeuptucson@gmail.com. We're doing a little Pretenders from the 80s for the Green Valley playlist. This is one of the really young Green Valleyers. Wake up, Tucson. All right, little Jimmy Buffett bubbles up as part of the Green, the entire town of Green Valley. They broke away from their pickleball, right, and their golf cart drag racing, and they came together to come up with a community playlist.
What a fine thing to put Green Valley together on.
You know, getting them out of there.
Nice project.
Absolutely. So, listener Robert, great segment with Don today. I walked through the Korean War Memorial in D.C. right around dusk many years back, and it was a hauntingly cool experience.
Yeah. Yes, yes, I've been there too.
Margo, of course, she's listening. shout out to Chosin Marine Al Felix, Easy
yes.
Company.
Yes.
Don made reference to him. He's one of the four, one of our cherished members that's still with us. The others he mentioned were also, but they've passed. And he said Al will be 95 years old in August. And she sent us a picture.
Oh, what a good looking guy.
He looks better than us at 95. I don't know what Al's doing there, but great picture of Al Felix. Yeah. So thank
Wonderful
you for your
man.
Service. So again, we'll do this again. As we like to say,
sure.
There's a lot of meat on this bone.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm getting great responses from people. Just the Wakeys love this kind of stuff. So
cool.
This is, and especially with the Tucson local angle, just amazing. So let's talk about as we move through here. Well, again, we'll come back and continue the story, as we say. And we're just talking about the ego of MacArthur and some of these decisions. In the end, did we ever? Was there a point in time where we should have never been there, or should we have been there? That's a question. There's a big question to start off. Should we have gone to Korea?
Well,
you know, we stopped the spread of communism.
I want to read this quotation from.
But I guess we did, because all the South Koreans, that with millions of lives that we preserved.
South Korea is a hell of a nation.
I have,
yeah, and they're very grateful, including your mother-in-law.
And I have the most wonderful South Korean bride. It's the love of my life, and I lived with her. Her mother lived with us for 10 years, and I was an absolute king in the house. So
it's good to be the king.
Yes, and the Korean educational system is based on the fact that they have very few resources. As I said, the Korea is mostly mountainous, only 20% arable land, very much a lack of resources, and they figured out real quickly that their resource was human. And so we just met with a couple of kids. They're friends of the family, and the daughter is getting a PhD from Iowa in neuroscience psychology, and the son-in-law is getting a master's degree in business analytics from the University of Texas. And they study from about 7:30 in the morning to 4 at school, take about an hour break, and then they go to learning academies until 10:30 at night. And that is their life completely.
Wow.
I mean, from the time they're little children all the way through. So they've really developed. And what the thing that you notice about
our kids are on TikTok till 10 at night.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, there's no comparison. But I wanted to get to this quotation from
yes, sir.
Dr. Weathersby, who put together all this information on from the declassified documents. This was her final quote, and it kind of shook me up. If Washington had made it clear that it would defend South Korea against an attack from the North, the Korean War never would have happened. That's pretty shocking. So again, what I said earlier, your military intelligence, number one, but then the perception that you create on the global scale with your diplomatic corps is really, really important.
We've had that discussion on the air about the current Ukraine situation.
Deja vu all over again.
Right? If we,
yes.
if we threw, you know, a couple of platoons in there and a few tanks to do war games.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, would Putin have done what he done? What
I
he
think
didn't?
That's a really good question, and I think it's an intuitive answer.
I mean, what you want to do is avoid war if you can,
yeah.
Right? That possibly was, I mean, I don't want to try to re-litigate history with Korea, but that was a war that maybe wouldn't have happened had we shown greater presence at that time. Certainly in the Ukraine-Russia war now, certainly that would have been the case.
I agree with that 100%.
And also in Israel.
Yes.
You know, the wrong message is being sent by the United States.
Yes.
Well, perceived weakness.
Power right. fills a vacuum. Sometimes it's you know, beneficial, and sometimes malevolent.
Yes.
Well, if you look at the perceived weakness of leading up to even Ukraine, look at the withdrawal out of Afghanistan.
Sure.
There you go.
Right? Weak, and also, of course, a disorganized total mess, leaving all of that ordnance there active.
Unbelievable.
Right? And Antonori's told us, if you're going to leave ordnance, you better blow it up.
Yes.
You would have thought, why didn't they blow all that stuff up? Unreal.
All right, before I run out of time, again, we're going to have part two hopefully next month, okay? One of the things I love is when you see people from South Korea who go to Washington and they go to the Korean War Memorial, and then there's these vets there. And that gratitude moment is still present and alive.
I'll just tell you, because I've been around so many South Koreans and so many vets, that the South Koreans so respect what the Korean, what the United States did. They are so grateful. And when our soldiers have gone over there on these trips for recognition, they're overwhelmed with it. It is not made up. It is absolutely 100% pure from the heart. When I was teaching, all I had to do in economics was say, okay, market economics, communism, let's take a look. Where are we going to look? Let's look at North Korea and look at South Korea. You show them a picture of what it looks like at night.
The living laboratory.
Yes. And you look at GDP per capita, et cetera, et cetera, any measurement you want. And so they are extremely grateful. And they're just really, really hardworking. They really are taking advantage of the opportunities that have been given to them.
The other thing I love with the gratitude moments, little kids understand.
They do.
Right? It's just not the 50 or 60-year-old South Korean.
Yeah.
You see the 9-year-old kids like, I know what you did and I appreciate it.
My wife tells me when she was going to grade school, they had to learn songs. So she has a song that mentions all 16 countries that supported the war. She can sing it today.
That's amazing.
What a great insight. That's awesome. Oh, my.
I got to see if we can find this South Korean song. Let's call it Appreciation. That's amazing.
Yeah. I've tried to get her to come to our meetings and sing it, but she's too embarrassed to do it. So maybe I'll get her someday.
I just want to get the words. See if you can find the word. You got the words someplace?
I'll get it.
When you come back next month.
Absolutely. That's your homework assignment.
Okay,
for next
I like
month.
Homework.
Not just giving homework, right?
I specialize in homework.
Well, Don, again, great to reunite with you after your tennis days.
Okay, well, thanks for having me so much.
And great, great job during
All
this
right.
hour. Everyone, okay, my phone's blowing up. My email's blowing up.
All right.
Great job.
Thank you so much.
And again, we'll have we'll have Don back next week, next month, excuse me. And then go to the Korean War Vets Memorial, the chapter is every first Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock over at TPD downtown. Just
Perfect.
Go.
Yes. You'll love seeing these guys.
Not only should you go and show your appreciation, and you'll just feel better about the world hanging out with these guys.
You got it. 100%. 100%.
Don Dickinson, have an amazing day.
Thank you so
Good
much.
Good job, my friend.
All right, bye-bye.
Bruce and I are going to march on the third hour of semi-award-winning radio on Wake Up Tucson.